What does Aladdin wear to the office on casual Fridays? His blue jeanies. Why can't summer and winter vacation together? Because summer's always looking for a hot time, but winter just wants to chill. What's brown and sounds like a bell? Dong.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to?
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve! From the world-famous Cardiff Electric Network studios, it's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner, gives me street cred. The wacko alternative medicine assholes. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And my wife and partner in all things. Hello, Tacey.
Hello.
This is a show for people who had never listened. That was very seductive. Hello. For people who had never listened to a medical show on the radio or the internet. Was that just wishful thinking on my part? It was. You were distracted. Oh, she's on her phone. That's why. If you have a question that you're embarrassed to take to a regular medical provider, if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call. 347-766-4323. That's 347.
Poohhead.
Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at DrScottWM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we're not your medical providers. Take everything here with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking over with your health care provider. All right, very good. Well, thank you, Dr. Scott. Check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net, simplyherbals.net, and check out stuff.drsteve.com. Mm-hmm. That is the place where you can buy the new Bristol Stool Scale mug. And there's actually a video there. We've had a couple go out. I've got a couple orders that I need to fill. And they're going, you know, there's only 30-some left. So.
Oh, a limited edition.
Yes, it's a limited edition. Once these are gone, no more of these particular ones will be made. We'll make the next batch a little bit better, but they're still okay. They're pretty good for, white elephant gift parties and stuff like that. Check that out at stuff.drsteve.com, or you can just click straight through and go to Amazon, and that actually helps us out a lot. Tweakedaudio.com, I think that link is still working. Offer code FLUID, F-L-U-I-D. You'll get 33% off the best earbuds for the price. They're great stocking stuffers and Hanukkah gifts, and they have the best customer service anywhere that I've ever seen. And then patreon.com/weirdmedicine. Give yourself the gift of knowledge and laughter.
Oh, yes.
As you check out our Patreon, it's mostly Tacey and me with some guests. We just had Pete Davidson on. We've had the troika of Opie and Anthony. That includes Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton. We've had Bobby Kelly, Joe DeRosa, Greg Norman. That's the golfer.
That's golfer. That's great.
So Mark Norman and other folks like that. So, check it out. We're going to have more of those type shows. And it's not a regular interview show. They call in and ask us questions. So that's fun. And then the best thing, though, and the cheapest, well, I should say least expensive, is to go to cameo.com/weirdmedicine and get me to say what up to you, mama, on Christmas, something like that. That's fun. I had High Pitch Eric say Christmas greetings to Beck and Liam 1 year. It cost me $50, but it was worth it because they think that's hilarious. So Cameo's fun. I'm dirt cheap, and probably for the holidays I'll make it even cheaper than that. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, cameo.com/weirdmedicine. And also think about Rochester in February. Oh, you know the weather is so nice around Finger Lakes in February. There's going to be an awesome show there. There's going to be 4 different shows and a VIP meet and greet. And just go to watplive.com to get tickets. And if you come and say, howdy do, I might buy you a beer or something, as long as you're not shooting for sobriety. And if you are, then a hearty handshake is in your future. All right, very good. Don't forget to check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. That's simplyherbals.net. And Tacy, you'll be happy to know I'm not going to announce Mr. Cardiff's birthday today. However, it is his wedding anniversary today.
Oh,
so congratulations to Mr. Cardiff.
Aren't we funny?
To his wedding anniversary.
Hilarious.
Congratulations, sir, owner of our network. Sounds good. All right, very good. Hey, we got some good response from the Vinnie Tortorich thing.
Enough clapping. Yeah.
From the Vinnie Tortorich thing last week. And I'm doing some deep diving on some of this business. He schooled me pretty good on a lot of stuff, particularly the estrogen content in plastic. I was not aware of that on any level. So I still would like to see if, I mean, I know we don't want any, but we don't want any insect parts in our oatmeal either, and we've got to deal with some. Is there any clinical relevance to that? Because if there isn't, then it's like it's interesting. And then it becomes almost like when the governor from Minnesota. From Minnesota.
Jesse Ventura.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's the dementia kicking in. The first thing that you lose is being able to name things, Tay. So just get
what
ready.
What about finding your keys that are under your nose?
That is funny.
Yeah,
Scott.
I was looking for my keys. I got Tacy's iPad out to search for my keys using the little Apple tag things, and they were literally, it wasn't even 6 inches from me.
Oh, goodness.
I don't know what's wrong with me. Anyway.
I think it's called too much going on.
Maybe. I hope that's what it is. I still seem to be high functioning. I'm not so worried about the dementia kicking in, but it is, I am having some trouble with things like naming things and stuff like that. Well, anyway.
It's lack of sleep.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. But Jesse Ventura was talking about how there's fluoride in, it's one of the ingredients in Prozac. And it's like, yeah, there's 3 fluoride atoms, fluorine atoms in Prozac, fluoxetine. But they're atoms. They're not ingredients. It's not a cake. It's not like you take a bunch of fluorine and then you take some carbon and some hydrogen. You all mix it up and then you've got Prozac, right? You have fluorine atoms that are drawing electrons away from the rest of the molecule that makes that part of the molecule more chemically active. That's all it is. And, he was saying that is evidence that putting fluoride in the water is trying to pacify the populace. Now, the vast majority of water in this country that is municipal has fluoride in it. Does this seem like a pacified fucking populace to you?
No.
So it's that kind of stuff. So what I really want to know is, does it make a clinical difference? Are people, because they're drinking out of plastic bottles, are guys growing gynecomastia? Are they getting breasts? Are women having menarche earlier, in other words, early periods earlier, stunting people's growth, that kind of stuff? Is it doing that? Is it causing an increase in estrogen-sensitive cancers like breast cancer or uterine cancer? And if it isn't, is it doing anything at all? Is it in, we can detect it, but is it something? So I'm looking into that. And then the business about soy still bugs me. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm buying it completely. Are you?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I don't know that soy is an abomination.
No.
Now, Vinny isn't here, but I would like to have him back sometime. And what we'll do is I've done a little bit of research on this, looking at health effects and adverse effects of soy. And so we'll see. You know, it was funny, though, that night, though. Tacy and I, we were cooking, and I looked at Tacy. I said, well, Vinny would be horrified because I made fried tofu that I fried in canola.
Lord.
And what else did we have? There was something else we call it, a Tortorich special. But I can't remember what it was. But anyway, check him out at VinnyTortorich.com. He's no longer the world's angriest trainer. He is now just trying to get people to eat right. So,
yeah.
And it was fun having him on. We were supposed to have him on for 15 minutes, and it was 45 minutes into
it. Yeah,
awesome. It just went by so fast. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, check him out. So I had a couple of articles from last week. I wanted to bring a gross thing in. This one was from New England Journal of Medicine. It says, what's worse? Well, this is okay. The image is from the New England Journal of Medicine, but the article is not. It says, what's worse than a parasitic worm infection? A parasitic worm infection that causes a calcified bladder, a condition that probably feels every bit as uncomfortable as it sounds. A 43-year-old man in Qatar found out just how painful a calcified bladder can be. He had blood in his urine and pain when he micturated. It doesn't say that. It says peed, but I refuse to say that. For a month before the doctors diagnosed him with an infection by the parasite. Do you know what it is? He's in the Middle East, and it's in his bladder. Do you know, Scott?
No.
Okay. Schistosoma, or schistosomiasis, which is transmitted by freshwater snails.
Okay.
The man's infection was located near his bladder and ureters. Those are the tubes connecting the bladder to the kidneys. Mm-hmm. And eggs of the parasite ended up in the wall of the man's bladder.
Ugh.
And his body's immune response caused those areas of the bladder wall to become calcified in a pattern known as eggshell calcification.
Ugh.
Well, this kind of calcification as a result of schistosomiasis is not rare. It's unusual for doctors to see a patient with an entire bladder encased in calcium, since it takes years for that much calcium to build up inside the body. So that was a hell of a damn
thing.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
He probably was infected by the parasite as a child, and he lived with it for at least 30 years before they prescribed a treatment, which I guess is, let's take your bladder out, and sorry about that. Now, you can, if you take someone's bladder out, you can make a sort of makeshift bladder out of part of their intestine. It's called an ileal conduit, where the ureters actually empty out from the kidney, though the tubes coming from the kidney will empty into a diverted piece of small intestine called the ileum. And you make a little stoma out of the side of the abdomen, which is a stoma meaning mouth or hole. And you just hook up a bag to that and you pee out of that instead. But it can be done. Mm-hmm. So if you lose your bladder for whatever reason, all is not lost. Your life just becomes a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's the other one. Another one from an image from the New England Journal of Medicine. Nothing ruins a day at the beach quite like getting a fish bone stuck in your eyeball.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, that's what happened to a beachgoer visiting the Red Sea in 2015. The 52-year-old tourist was swimming in the Red Sea when he collided with a school of fish.
Oh, no.
Those are dumbass fish. Usually they'll get out of your way.
Yeah, they'll swim around you.
Not long after the incident, the man developed a swollen and droopy eyelid that wouldn't heal. The doctor's visit revealed that he had an area of inflammation called a granuloma on his eyelid. That's just a collection of fiber and white blood cells, basically. And the patient underwent surgery to connect the issue, but the granuloma wasn't the only thing doctors removed from the erstwhile swimmer's eyeball during the surgery. Erstwhile means he used to swim. That means he's never going to swim again, basically, is what they're implying. Two tubular structures were also removed from the man's eyelid, according to the report republished in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2015. A biologist was called in to examine these strange specimens, which you can do when you're at like a really highfalutin university, which turned out to be the jaw bones of a halfbeak, a fish that dwells in shallow coastal waters. Not something.
Dang.
So there you go.
In his eyeball.
Well, it was actually in his eyelid.
Eyelid, okay. Gotcha.
I pulled it because it said eyeball, and then
yes.
It was clickbait.
Oh, Lord.
Because medical journalists or whoever make these lists don't know the difference between an eyelid and an eyeball.
No.
Anyway, so there you go. That was left over from – I was supposed to do that last week when Vinny was here, and he was just so interesting.
So he was a good one.
I bought a whole kit on – and I this is so funny. I bought a kit of I've been getting into fermented stuff,
yep.
So I made fermented pickles, which were amazing, by the way.
Well, let's rewind. Since COVID started, how many different things did he get into, Taze? Let's see, baking.
I mean, it's enough is enough.
He started baking. Yeah.
And I did not know
that. And it was fermenting kombucha.
What I was getting into when we got married. it was pottery at that time.
And then it was winemaking.
Yeah, that's right. We got married.
Yeah, that was winemaking.
Because I invited her to pottery class.
Yep.
And she came. She didn't realize that was just one of 10,000 things that I did. She thought that was, this is that doctor who's the pottery guy.
Yep.
No, it's the doctor who's the dilettante.
Yes, you're like, your face really should be.
I am a fucking dilettante.
ADHD.
Yeah, that too.
Times 47.
Well, yeah,
old.
No. Yeah, that's why I was stupid Steve growing up, because I had ADHD and they didn't know what that was.
Well, now you're really smart, Steve.
Yes, very smart.
So, we've been through poker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Remember that? I remember that.
Taught poker.
Moonshine.
Yes. Yeah, we made moonshine. Are you writing this down? You have a list? You're looking at something.
No.
Okay. She's doing this
for memory. I'm multitasking.
Okay, fair enough.
Wine.
So
moonshine.
Yes.
What? Then
beer.
Liqueurs.
Yeah.
Liqueurs. I was pregnant during all that, so I didn't.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And then we got into making sausage.
Yeah.
With the links and all
that. Oh, yeah. And smoking them.
Smoking them.
Mm-hmm. And eating them.
And then we moved.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then we started having kids, and then kids became the hobby for a while.
Yeah, just never.
You left out ham radio, by the way.
Well, and the whole time it's been consistent ham radio. Painting his dolls.
Dolls.
And then you're forgetting the big thing, the Moog. The synthesizers.
Then the Moog.
I forgot about that. and then the thing that you're sitting in right now, studio.
Which would be a great Christmas tree closet for me, if you think about it. Think of all the stuff I could keep in here, but
We maybe could do something like that. If we moved the studio somewhere.
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
That has air conditioning and stuff. But anyway, so I started doing this fermented stuff, and I thought it would be good for, good for my gut and all that stuff, and if I could get the kids to eat it. So I used to make yogurt and things, so I made the pickles, and I made sauerkraut, which Tacy ate. I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't sour enough for me. Mm-hmm. And what else did we make? I made that fermented hot sauce that is kick-ass.
It is good.
Oh, my God, is it good.
Good stuff, yeah.
And that all started because I had a Tabasco pepper plant, and I never planted one before. And they're these beautiful little peppers. I think we talked about it last time. And they're all different colors, mm-hmm. beautiful. They're all perfect little things. And I read, I should make Tabasco sauce out of that.
Go.
Well, to do that, you have to ferment the shit. So that means you got to go buy all this stuff to ferment it. And it wasn't that big of a deal. Well, anyway. So I said, I am going to, for my hippie friend, mm-hmm. Dr. Scott, I'm going to make kombucha. So I got a starter kit. I got this thing. And I had this fantasy that I was going to supply you with all the kombucha that you would ever want. And then today, so I'm ready, almost ready to bottle it, mm-hmm. my first batch. And Scott comes in and I'm like, hey, Scott. Do you like kombucha? He's like, not that much.
it's a requirement to be a hippie, actually. It's absolutely a requirement.
So probably should have asked first before I went to all this.
Well, why would you think so? He's got a Grateful Dead t-shirt on. He's got the man bun going. Mm.
Well, and he's a vegan,
and I figured with it.
He likes kimchi. I remember you told me you like kimchi at one point.
I do like kimchi, and I'm sure that your kombucha will be fabulous.
No, I don't know. It's fabulous. It's an acquired taste for sure.
I'm looking forward to it.
But when you talk about probiotics for a second.
Oh yeah, heck yeah, yeah.
You know the gut biome has a huge impact on. It's looking like even crazy shit like memory and stuff, but certainly mood. And certainly when your gut is working, you know, you can't separate your mind from your body. But when your gut is working, your mood is going to be better, those kinds of things. And you could go buy those capsules that have all these freeze-dried bacteria in it. And it'll be two or three strains of lactobacillus. And, you know, bacteria are so stupid and simple. You can freeze dry them, then you put them in water, they come back to life.
Right.
It's ridiculous. But there's also yeast, good yeast in there as well, like Saccharomyces, which is basically brewer's yeast. So, and you might get 39 billion colonies out of that, and maybe, you know, 1% of those will survive. One thing at kombucha is, you know, is trillions of bacteria in there and lots of different colonies, you know, just multiple you know, colonies beyond what you can get in the store, and they, you know, they're all beneficial. So, so or at least they're benign, and they work well with your gut. I guess that's what I should say. I don't want to make any medical claims about it.
But, you know.
But anyway, so I'm fascinated by it. I'm going to make it, and then I'm sure after a while, my starter, which is like a sourdough starter
for the garage.
There's a thing that's that lives in it that's like the sourdough starter. You ever made sourdough bread?
No, but I thought some of the.
I used to make sourdough bread, and it broke my heart when the stupid starter died. And I said, "Oh, fuck it!" And I never made anymore. But this thing has a thing in it called a SCOBY. It's a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yogurt. And one of our listeners was the one that told me about this.
Oh, cool.
And it's a little floating alien that lives in there, and that's what makes the kombucha. You know, it ferments all the stuff. So, okay, well, I'll call that person back later. But anyway, it's fascinating. The whole process is fascinating. Don't know how in the hell somebody did this in the first place. Without, you know, just effing it all up.
Yep.
But anyway, it's a whole thing. There are kombucha brewing stores. There's a whole section in the grocery store that I never realized was there. So anyway, I'll try to make something good. I'm going to make raspberry cherry kombucha.
Oh, cool.
If you like it, fine. If you don't, I'll find somebody that'll drink this damn shit. Anyway.
I'm sure it'll be good.
That's my newest hobby. Anyway. All right. You got some stories?
I love it. Oh, yeah. We got a couple stories.
We could talk about how we're going to do our turkey this year.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that I can beat the kombucha.
Oh, it's not as terrible. It's boring. Nobody cares. You know, when I'm sitting there talking about it, this is what I hear in my head. You know,
man, it's just like, you are one pathetic loser.
That's what I hear.
I know. I know.
I love it. Well, so we'll
no,
keep,
I'm just kidding. I don't hear
we'll
that.
Keep things on the.
Or I hear this. This is the other thing I hear in my head.
Oh, wow, that is very interesting. Please tell me more.
I understand. I feel your pain. It's our holiday show. We're recording this the day before Thanksgiving.
See, we're going to keep it live. We're not going to give everybody all that shit that Vinny gave us last week. Brought everybody in. We're going to pick everybody up for the Thanksgiving holidays, right?
Well, I think he gave people hope that you can eat and have a better life.
We're going to eat like thing. Motherfuckers.
Yes,
tomorrow.
We are. And enjoy it.
That's
and I
right.
am dry brining my turkey. And I will post a picture of it on Twitter. I quartered it last night, took the breasts off, took the legs and thighs, and then the wings, and then took all of that off, took the carcass. I would have normally made stock out of the carcass, but I just said, screw it, I'll cheat when I make the gravy. So, but you could do that. You take the carcass and the neck and all that stuff in there and put it in water and bring it, you know, boil it down to about 50%, strain it, and then you can make gravy out of that. But I did not do that. I wasted the carcass, but I dry brined it, so it's got tons of salt over it. It will not taste salty when it's cooked. And all those juices are now being driven into the center of the turkey, and they will stay there.
Ooh.
Right? And they will stay there even after it's cooked. So I'm going to sear the skin and then bake it for like 20 minutes in a 450-degree oven. And then the dark meat can go back in and stay in for a little bit longer. You want the white meat to be 160 degrees. The dark meat should be about 180, which is really hard to do if you're cooking the thing all at once in one big bird. Plus, when you've got a giant spherical sort of bird thing, it's hard for the heat to get into the middle. It takes much longer.
Yep.
So anyway, all right. So
perfect.
There you go. Try dry brining your turkey next time.
Turkey talk with
yes,
Dr.
Sir.
Steve.
Well, it is the day before Thanksgiving. It is the day before. Of course, it's going to come out.
The day after.
Yeah, the day after. Thanksgiving. So
that's
I'm
okay.
An idiot.
Everybody will be hungover
well,
with turkey.
Well, because you're an idiot.
Well, hopefully people will be still celebrating their Thanksgiving.
That's right. Well, they could file that for next year.
The Thanksgiving weekend as well, or for Christmas maybe.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The next big holiday. So I've got some good uplifting news.
Okay.
You guys are going to love this. So beer, keeping with our holiday
already paying attention.
Yes, could be the key to preventing Alzheimer's.
Really? I do know that what beer does is it makes you stand in front of the stage and yell the F word at the bass player for an hour.
Say crazy stuff?
Yeah. At the Isotopes concert. That's what beer does.
I'm pretty sure that's not the only time you've done that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, what was the other?
Okay, well, also what it does is make you stand up on the table and yell the F word at the guitar player at the Indigos concert.
Yes, Indigos.
Yeah,
Indigos.
That
I could
too.
Not think of that name for anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my God. So researchers have found, researchers suggest in a recent study that the hop flower extracts found in beer could hold the key to preventing Alzheimer's, which is a common form of dementia.
Woohoo! So I should make
hoppy beer.
Hop kombucha.
Yep. Oh.
Yeah.
Now that's a good idea.
Okay,
why hops, you may ask?
Yeah, why hops? What's the deal? What do they got in?
Generally acting as a stabilizing agent in beers.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that's why they started using hops 1,000 years ago
sure.
to transport things.
Yeah,
because it gave stability.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Yep.
And,
makes total sense. And their beer back then didn't have much fizz to it. Couldn't have had any.
Couldn't have, no.
It would be like the primary fermentation. I can't imagine how they would do a secondary fermentation back then. And unless... Well, it'd be very difficult.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But, so that's what they're saying is that the hops, the stabilizing agents, and four common varieties of hop flower extracts to determine whether they would help prevent protein clumping affiliated with Alzheimer's.
Okay, so this was in test tube.
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
So hop varieties, as we love Cascade, is probably my favorite. Tetnong Summit hops, which... is pretty familiar. I'm not familiar with SAAZ. I don't know.
That's anyway. If we had PA John in here, he would wax eloquent about it, even if he was just lying.
Yeah, even though he doesn't know jack shit about it.
He doesn't make up stuff, but he would sound good.
Yeah, now he's just stupid PA John again.
Poor PA John.
Yeah, we've not got a single cause identified to Alzheimer's as far as just one simple thing. It's, there's multiple factors, genetics, lifestyle, environment, et cetera. But what they're saying is that the hops may disrupt some of the clumping mechanisms, that might be causing some of the clumping that causes Alzheimer's, yeah.
Well, I'm gonna.
So we're gonna.
I gotta get some hops. I'm gonna put some.
What about
in that batch
alcoholic kombucha?
Yeah. You can put alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Is it worth drinking?
Oh yeah, totally.
There's what you need to make, Scott.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I was just thinking.
Well, you could just put vodka in.
And a little tequila or a little vodka.
Oh,
fine.
Okay. Or you could just do that.
Or I'm thinking maybe hops now.
There is like 0.5% alcohol in it.
I see. There's probably a little bit of alcohol in there, isn't there?
Yeah, a little bit.
Interesting. So what do you think about that? That's good news.
I think that's awesome.
That's good news.
Yeah, I want to know more about that. So let's talk for a second. They've got this preliminary data in vitro.
Mm-hmm.
We know hops are safe, basically, for consumption, at least in the doses that we use. So how would we determine whether hops in humans actually decreases the incidence of Alzheimer's disease? So we would eventually, if we want to prove it, do a double-blind placebo-controlled study, right?
Yep.
Now, What dose do we use? We don't know. We got to make something up. So you come up with a dose, presumably one that's safe.
Yep.
And you give it to a bunch, say 30, 40 people, and make sure they can tolerate it first. That's your phase one trial. Then, are you okay?
Yeah, I thought I was going to sneeze. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was trying not to sneeze.
You're puking over there.
No, Gus, no. I was overjoyed.
Scott's vomiting over
hop,
here.
The hop talk is making me
I would
me
stop
happy.
Talking. But anyway, so you would do that. Make sure that, because we don't know what the dose would be. We have no clue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you design a study where, you know, and we've talked about this enough on the show, I don't have to go into a lot of detail, where you give 1,000 people the hops pill and 1,000 people the placebo pill. There's right. no ethical reason not to do that because we don't have any real reason to think that the hops thing is a standard of care.
Yep.
If it were, then we would have to come up with a more ethical way to do it. In other words, if we were depriving someone of a treatment that we know would help them, then you can't really give them a placebo, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So, but in this case, it would be fine. And then now what? You got to follow them for decades.
Yep.
That's the problem with
that.
That
is the problem with that one, yeah.
So you'd have to have funding, and it would have to be the Hops Association, probably, whatever that is. Yeah, would have to fund this thing, and then you would have to follow these people over decades. Now, it wouldn't cost that much money to do this. This would not be a billion-dollar thing. Now, at the end of this, if you would have to decode the codes on the people's little dose packs to see who got hops and who got placebo. Mm-hmm. And then you have to do just a statistical analysis, like a chi-square analysis, to determine whether there was a statistical significance between the treatment group and the placebo group.
Right.
And was it positive? In other words, it could be statistically significant. They did worse. Mm-hmm. And then if you can do that, you can make a claim. Now, if it doesn't show anything, it doesn't tell you anything. What it tells you is either it doesn't work or you picked the wrong dose.
Right.
And you fucked up and you wasted 20 years.
Right.
You know, and now you got to start all over again and decide whether you've got the willpower to do it. That's why some of this science moves so slow, you know, and is because of those kinds of things. It's just it's so difficult to do a study like this. And who's going to fund it? So what will happen is people will just read this and go, oh, well, hops isn't going to hurt you. So here you go. Maybe this will help. And then you have people like me and, well, you and me taking a bunch of supplements that we hope will do something for us.
Yep.
You know, Ray Kurzweil, I don't know if he's still alive, but he was trying to extend his life till he could upload his brain into a computer. And he was taking like 200 supplements because anytime something would come out, at least this is what I heard, may or may not be true. Allegedly, if a study came out that said this stuff might help in vitro, in other words, in the test tube, then he would start taking it as long as it was safe. So, yeah, my collection has increased. Now I'm taking phosphatidylserine because of you.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
And
no, I love this stuff. I think it
and nicotinamide riboside and some other things. And, I don't know. Look decent for a 67-year-old, so maybe it's genetics or maybe some of that stuff's helping. I don't know.
Maybe it's all those hops we've consumed in the last
maybe. It
years.
Certainly isn't from all the exercise I'm doing. That I've got to do something about.
Yeah, I went on a good one today. I think I told you. I took the dogs up on the mountain.
Did you?
We did almost 5 miles.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then my cold therapy.
Don't I usually give you the iFit thing for Christmas? Isn't that a Christmas present?
Yes.
Yeah. So this will be the fourth year, and we use the fucking thing.
But it's but I'm this doing year. It, anyway. It will be different.
Yeah, she's retired this year. It's different.
I got to look and see. Usually they send me an email saying it's going to expire. It may have already expired. Mm. I don't know. But anyway, all right. That's very interesting, Dr. Scott, and that's how we would determine that.
Yep.
And but I am going to definitely get some hops and brew a batch of hoppy raspberry kombucha
cool.
and see what it tastes like.
Cool, cool, cool. I like it. I like it.
Do
I like
you?
It. I like it. I'm looking
we'll
forward
see.
To it.
Okay, what else you got? Do you have anything else?
A couple, yeah, but I've there's a couple questions. Yeah, I know. You sent me a couple. You want to talk about the bubble?
Talk about anything you want.
The combination of ultrasound and nanobubbles allows cancerous tumors to be destroyed without any invasive treatments.
Okay, let's talk about that. So what did they do?
So a new technology they're looking at overseas makes it possible to destroy cancerous tumors in a targeted manner via a combination of ultrasound and the injection of nanobubbles into the bloodstream.
Okay.
Whereas before, they were actually, when they first started doing this, they were having some luck actually delivering the bubbles directly into the tumor itself.
Uh-huh.
But it's pretty invasive.
Okay.
And what they found now is they can actually put these microbubbles into the tumor, and it.
And they're forcing it in with ultrasound.
Yeah, and then forcing it with ultrasound, exactly. And then what that does is it is actually the bubbles go into the cancer, starves it of its blood supply and starts to lyse it. So it starts to kill the tumor.
Interesting. Yeah, nanobubbles are 70 to 120 nanometers in size. Boy, those are really small. 2,500 times smaller than a single grain of salt. They can be formed using any gas and injected into any liquid. Due to their size, nanobubbles exhibit unique properties that improve numerous physical, chemical, and biological processes. So that's very, very interesting. So I guess the nanobubbles are filled with what? Oxygen?
I'm looking to see what it says.
That could be air.
Yeah, I think it's just oxygen. And then they hit it with the ultrasound.
Because you need...
And agitates it. Yeah.
Fluid to pass blood through tissue to make, to grow. Mm-hmm. And tumors need that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if you could put nanobubbles somehow in there, basically what it does is it robs the tumor of the ability to get blood supply and it would die. So, mm-hmm. But you've got to... get it to the right place and concentrate it there and keep it there. So maybe that's what the ultrasound is doing. Yep. So did they do these? What situation was this? This was in a simulated?
Well, he did. It was in breast tissue of mice.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right.
But yeah.
So mechanical stuff like this done in, a murine model. That's mm-hmm. what that's called when you do it in mice.
Okay.
That's decent way to start for a human trial because, they metabolize drugs differently than we do.
Mm-hmm.
So something that works in a mouse may not work in a human. But physics is the same for mice humans.
Yeah, humans. Yeah.
So this is a physical process. The physics is the same. So this should work. So that's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
What they're showing is these nanobubbles cause by applying the low frequency, the low frequency to them, it does cause them to swell.
Okay.
And then they explode.
Interesting.
Yeah. And,
okay.
Yeah. What they're doing is they're just agitating those nanobubbles to the point where they just lyse and they explode.
Yeah. So, okay. Cool.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, yeah. I'm looking forward to all this kind of stuff.
So that's on breast, and which kind of goes to, we had a question earlier.
Well, the thing is, breast tumors in mice are on the outside of the rib cage, because breast tissue is superficial to the rib cage.
Yep, sure.
So it's easy to get ultrasonic energy into that tissue, whereas if it was colon tissue, it'd be much harder to do.
Yes.
So that's why they're using a breast model.
Interesting.
That would be my guess, anyway.
Well, it makes good sense. Yeah, it would be nice if they could get to some other things like prostates and
you can get to a damn prostate.
Yeah,
the back wall of the prostate is the front wall of the rectum.
Yep,
as many of us are
very well aware. But you think about it, you could actually technically run an ultrasound.
Yeah,
up the colon.
No, they do it all the time.
Yeah, but then bust those nanobubbles.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be wild?
It would be wild.
Well, that's cool.
All right.
Yeah, we had a good couple medical questions.
Okay, yeah, we probably should do that. Hang on a second.
Yeah, while you're...
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right. Thank you, Ronnie B.
There was one just a minute ago about, and I'm trying to find it, way back, about, here we go, kidney cancer. So Ryan... Kurtz has a question about it. They've got a cancerous golf ball sized tumor in one of his father's kidneys.
Okay.
According to the urologist, it has not metastasized.
Okay, good.
Which is a good thing. They will perform a partial nephrectomy.
Yes.
And looking for some insight. So
okay.
Yeah. So, A partial nephrectomy would be wonderful.
Yeah, so partial, yeah. Meaning they're not going to take out the whole thing. That part's easy. Nephrectomy, nephro relating to the kidney. Ectomy, right. Meaning cut out.
Removal, yeah.
So they're going to remove part of right. The kidney.
Yeah, which would be outstanding. You know, the thing is with the partial nephrectomy, they go right through the navel, and you can barely even see the scar.
Really?
Typically, yeah. I mean, it's a really small, really small incision. Normally, if things go well, obviously, but the recovery time for that, if it's not metastasized, should be pretty quick. And as long as he takes his doctor's advice, specifically the nephrologist, who I'm sure he'll, or I would assume he'll see for follow-ups, you know, to protect his one kidney moving forward, which is going to be very important.
Yeah, so if they do this laparoscopically, then Dr. Scott is correct. Mm-hmm. They make 2 to 4 incisions in the abdomen, about a half inch or less, and they get this thin rod that's got a camera on the end, which is the laparoscope, and they do that into one incision so that they can see, and then the surgical tools go into the other incisions. And it's amazing. I've watched this. I don't know how the hell they do it.
Oh, that's
great. You just have to, your mindset has to be different. Mm-hmm. You know, now they can do an open nephrectomy too, so it just depends. You got to ask which one are you going to do.
Yeah.
But that's as long as it hasn't metastasized, and that is, the prognosis is pretty good. Mm-hmm. As long as Pops is in otherwise
good
decent
health.
Physical shape. Yeah. So please let us know. And they can do robotic partial nephrectomies as well, you know, mm-hmm. if it's small enough. They can do it, and it is a robot-assisted surgery, and the surgeon is in a different room mm-hmm. when they do this.
Crazy.
It's crazy, it's nuts.
Yeah,
and I've watched that as well, and they don't have to scrub or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just sitting over there in this other room manipulating these little Waldo things, and the surgery is going on in a different room. It could be in a different town.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
That's incredible. Yeah. So, but it sounds like they must have found it pretty early for them to only have to do a partial nephrectomy, which is a really good thing.
Yeah. It's major surgery, but so you'll have to go through the whole anesthesia and all that stuff. And the anesthesiologist will make sure that you're fit for surgery and that kind of thing. And so, but let us know how that goes and give your dad our best. It was a dad.
Dad, yeah, and tell him just to diet. There's a lot of dietary things he can do to help protect that other kidney, and but he should.
Well, it does make the rest of your kidneys a little bit more precious.
Yes,
we have two. Yes. You can live with one.
Fragile,
right? It's very fragile.
Now it's gonna be very fragile. All right, so he's got a question. Any benefit from getting MS diagnosed early?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so he thought he had just had depression, but WebMD has him convinced he has MS.
Oh.
So,
okay.
So that's a little bit of a tricky question.
Yeah.
Because MS can really can look like about 1,000 different things.
Sure it can. It can, it's like.
It's a lot of things.
It's like fungal infections can mimic other things very often. They particularly on a, if you get fungal infection in your lung, it looks like cancer or something like that. Mm. The other thing is when you get on the internet, you've got everything.
Exactly. Yep.
And it's a disease that affects the central nervous system. We have a friend or two that have it. And, people who have MS may have, numbness or tremors or vision problems. I know somebody that they would know that the multiple sclerosis was coming because
having
they would
a flare.
Yeah, they would right. They would get a flare because they would have it was like a screen going over their eye. So it in multiple sclerosis, the immune system attacks this sheath. That it's basically insulation. You know the wiring in your house.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that rubber.
Yep.
A coating over it, because if you just had bare wires, they'd all short out, right? Mm-hmm.
Cause fires.
Yeah, and cause fires and stuff. And we have the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. This was invented way before we ever thought about transmitting electricity from one place to the other. Nature had already done it. This is, it's transmitting electrical impulses from one place to another. It's amazing. And dealing with quantum objects and stuff, life on Earth is an amazing thing. But anyway, this protective sheath is called myelin, and it covers the nerve fibers. And what happens is when you attack it, you get interruptions in it, and it causes communication problems between the brain and the rest of your body. And there's several different kinds of multiple sclerosis. And one is the, chronic remitting where they have attacks and then they're okay in between time. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people who get this sort of chronic progressive disease where they just get worse and worse and
primary
worse.
Primary progressive, yeah.
So, when you have numbness or weakness in one or more limbs, and it typically occurs on one side of the body at a time, that might be suggestive of it. Mm-hmm. These sort of shocking sensations that occur with certain neck movements, but that could be lots of different things. Mm-hmm. Tremors, unsteady gait, which is why this is difficult to diagnose, because there's lots of things that can cause tremors and unsteady gait. Loss of vision, maybe double vision. Other things can cause that too. We've got a good friend of this show that had double vision. He didn't have MS. He had Graves' disease, alluded to it, so I'm not saying anything that he wouldn't say. And Graves' disease is a disease of the eyeballs that is caused by thyroid disease. It causes your eyeballs to bloop out, and now they don't work perfectly anymore. They don't track anymore. Mm-hmm. You can get slurred speech, fatigue, dizziness, that kind of stuff. So most people have this sort of remitting relapsing course where it comes and goes. But again, as we said, there are people that have
primary progressive.
Right. Now, there's several ways you can diagnose this. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they would do if they really thought that you had it would be to get an MRI. And the MRI, you can see the changes in the myelin sheathing. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty diagnostic. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you got anything on it? Just go get it. If you think you have, yes, I guess his question is, I looked at the internet and I think I have this. Mm-hmm. Should I go or should I wait? If it's wearing on your mind, you wake up in the middle of the night. Our son, you remember Beck used to think he had rabies? Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? And then yes. He would wake up and say, Dad, can you get rabies from licking the peanut butter jar or something? Which told me he'd been licking the peanut butter jar. And it's like, no, dude, you can't. And he'd go, okay, and he'd go back to bed. But it would wear on his mind for a while. That went on for a little while. This can wear on your mind and bug you, and it can mess up your lifestyle, and your memory starts to go because you have these intrusive thoughts about having multiple sclerosis. Go get checked out,
Definitely.
Do it at your next primary care visit, if you can wait that long. If you can't, make an appointment.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's a really tough thing to treat. And the relapsing remitting sometimes a little bit easier, taking away some of the...
It's gotten a lot easier.
We
used to have no treatment other than steroids and back in the day, but now they've got these biologicals and stuff, and really they've gotten so much better. Mm-hmm. Plasma exchange, you can do plasmapheresis, just cleanse your body of the offending antibodies.
Yep. Yeah, I've even seen them do a bone marrow transfer, where they radiate kill all the bone marrow and put
really?
It... Yeah. Yeah, but that's the extreme version.
Wow, I have not heard of that, but I'm not an expert on this.
No, nor am I.
They do interferons. Mm-hmm. There are monoclonal antibodies that can, modify the disease. So, all kinds of stuff. And neurologists typically are the ones that treat this. And, it is way, way, way more treatable now than it was. And I'm looking, and Scott, I believe you, but I'm looking at Mayo Clinic, and I don't see anything about bone marrow replacement on that.
It was actually...
I'm not saying it.
Yeah.
That it isn't, but that's outside my experience. So, but anyway,
so Amy was saying that Nano Bubbles was her stripper name until she grew boobies.
Nano Bubbles. Another person I can think of that isn't here today.
I love it.
All right. You got anything else from the waiting room? We've got a couple other regular calls.
Yeah, somebody else had one. I think Bob Boppington had one.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay, medical question. Since yesterday evening, I have this itch on my wrists, both wrists, my neck, some of my fingers, some of my chest, as if there's something some kind of allergic reaction.
Okay.
There's no rash or any other visible signs.
Hmm.
No other symptoms. No bug bites that would have caused it. What should I do? Just take some Claritin or something similar? He doesn't usually have allergies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Ask him if he's a big-time drinker.
Big-time drinker.
Yeah.
Smoker. Yeah, well, changes medications or anything like that.
Yeah, any of those things. You know, I'm being somewhat ridiculous. He would know. Cirrhosis can certainly cause itching all over. There are lots of things that can cause itching all over. But if it comes and goes, see, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Cirrhosis and those other really dangerous things don't come and go. They come and stay. So it's more likely that he got into some weird detergent. If it's only in places where his clothes touch, then it's most likely a
wrist neck shirt. That's what I was thinking too.
It's more likely
contact dermatitis.
So, yes, you can just take something. If it goes away, forget about it. If it doesn't go away, then get it checked.
Yeah, Claritin, Benadryl, something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a reasonable
over the counter stuff. It's totally fine. It's hard to
no drinking, no smoking.
Good deal. It's hard to bathe your whole body in cortisone, so it's easier to take a non-drowsy antihistamine like fexofenadine, a.k.a. Allegra or something like that. All right?
Yep.
All right. Anything else? Okay, let's do this one.
I think we're good, yep.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Dr. Steve and Dr. Scott.
Hey.
I'm a 26-year-old guy, and so sometimes when I'm laying in bed at night, you know, gherkin the gherkin.
Excellent.
And after I, bust a nut.
All these euphemisms. jerking the gherkin and busting a nut.
Oh, my God.
I'll get this sensation like I really have to, like, take a piss.
Yeah.
Or I'll doze off, and after 20 minutes, half hour.
Yes.
I'll get up with this sudden urge to piss.
Yeah, I know what this is already.
Now, sometimes I go piss, and then it just gets worse.
Yes.
In any case, I have to sit on the toilet and, just letting out dribbles of piss intermittently for a half hour, 45 minutes.
Yep.
And it just keep doing that until this sensation subsides.
Yeah.
Now, I've tried Googling this, and
you need to listen to our show more because we've talked about this before. I know exactly what this is, and I can get you off the toilet. The question I have is, when he's jerking his gherkin in bed, what's he do with the product?
The fluid?
To just go on his stomach and then he squeegees
it down with
his underwear.
Well, disgusting.
There is a comedian out there that's their closing jokes.
No, everything on Google just says, you got a UTI or, you got an STD.
Wrong.
Wrong. I don't have.
Okay, this goes on. I am interested to see what else
he has to say.
I have
any burning when I'm pissing during the day.
Right.
I've, been tested regularly for STDs and I'm always negative.
Yep.
And I just have no idea what this is. And it has.
Okay, he keeps going. I am very curious, but we are kind of running out of time. I'm very curious to see what he has to say. I know what this is. This is spasm of the urethra.
Yep. And, urethral spasms.
I should have just asked you. That was one I should have asked you. Here, Scott, do you know what this is?
It's a urethral spasm, of
Give
course.
Yourself a bill!
Yes, a bill, finally, before the time runs
that's
out.
That's right. So,
I never get those.
Yes, you do. You
I
get
do
one every
not.
Day.
Don't want one.
Give yourself a bill!
Give you one anyway.
That's not fair.
I'm going to give you one anyway. Here's another one.
Give yourself a bill!
Yeah, that's not fair.
It was funny when I gave Anthony a couple of those when he was on our podcast or on the Patreon show. Check us out at patreon.com/weirdmedicine, by the way. We recently had Pete Davidson on there. That was a great show. Got him for all of 10 minutes. But
10
anyway,
minutes.
This year, and we've had Anthony Cumia, Bobby Kelly, Joe DeRosa, Mark Normand, and some other folks like that. So,
Opie.
Yep. We had Greg Opie Hughes. We've had Jim Norton. This is urethral spasm. Other people have this. Let me tell you what to do. When this happens, and I, you know how I know this? Because from experience.
You've experienced
yes.
this.
take a glass or something, a cup, and put warm, not hot water in it.
Thimble.
Yeah, a thimble. You're hilarious. And then you're going to dip.
Give him a bill.
I need another bill.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, right. It's Thanksgiving. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, let's see.
You are a liar, actress. Go the f*** out.
You dip your penis into this warm water. Now, it needs to be warm enough. It needs to be slightly warmer than body temperature.
Has this happened to our glasses in our
house?
The
one that you drink out of?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I clean it out afterward.
Oh,
don't worry about
good.
It.
Oh, good. Great.
I'm kidding. But you dip your penis in this warm water. And ooh, this sensation will immediately go away.
Ooh.
Now, if it doesn't, it's not warm enough, but don't make it so hot that you injure yourself. It cannot be hot. I don't want to hear about somebody. I'm telling you, not too hot. It needs to be just above body temperature. And so test it before you put your junk in it. Okay.
Dunk. So Amy says, dunk your junk.
Yes.
I think that's
dunk your junk.
That'd be a good band name for us.
Be a good t-shirt.
Dunk your junk.
Good t-shirt with a penis going into a glass of warm water, and no one would understand why you had this horrible image. But yeah, that normally will take care of it, and you'll be right back to bed, and to whatever you can clean up whatever mess you made otherwise. All right. Well, let's get out of here. Thanks. Always go to Dr. Scott. Thanks, Tacy.
You're welcome.
Didn't
Thank
hear
you.
Too much from you today, but
that's okay.
Yeah, all right.
I was drinking.
Next time. Oh, you are drinking?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, okay. Am I gonna have any fun tonight?
No. No. You gonna be cooking?
Nope.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Thanks to everyone who's made the show happen over the years. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 6 or 10 p.m. Eastern, on demand, the best way, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules, podcasts, and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week. For the next edition of Weird Medicine. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Goodbye.